She's the first lady of a controversial religion.
She is the one that knows every secret, everything that went on with the church.
But 10 years ago, she disappeared from public view.
No one would say where she was, and the mystery began to snowball.
Insiders say, in the world of Scientology, there are some questions you dare not ask.
In my opinion, Scientology is a snitching culture. It's an interrogation culture.
I think it's all part of the control.
The church, it's building up this almost institutional arrogance that ultimately has very dangerous consequences for one young woman.
She's a raving, manic person.
They were in charge of her care, and they failed at both.
It's a world where surveillance and secrecy rule.
It was about what lengths that group will go to control a crisis and then to cover it up.
In depth, insightful, in a class of its own. It's America's leading journal, Vanity Fair. Contributing editor Ned Zeman wants to know, what happened to Scientology's vanished queen? It's August 2007. Maurice Barnett, 77 years old, just died. His family has gathered to say goodbye. Barnett, a member of the Church of Scientology, is honored during the services by his daughter, 46-year-old Shelley Miscavige.
In the course of this event, she has to go to the ladies' room, and there she happens upon a friend. This friend was anxious and she was afraid. And she asks Shelley, can I have some help?
Like Shelley Miscavige and her family, Shelley's friend is a Scientologist, and she's in trouble. The friend has been branded an SP, a suppressive person.
And it's the worst thing Scientology can call somebody. Once you're declared SP, every single Scientologist in the world is required to cut off all ties to you. So it's almost like a death sentence for some people. Any Scientologist who was in that position would look at someone like Shelley Miscavige as someone they could appeal to.
Shelley Miscavige was the first lady of the Church of Scientology. She was the wife of David Miscavige, the leader of the church, known as the COB, or the chairman of the board.
She was not only married to David Miscavige, she was thought of as his most important lieutenant. Dave and Shelley Miscavige lived the kind of lives of people who run an international multi-billion dollar organization.
They were a consummate power couple. She was to him as Nancy Reagan was to Ronald Reagan. It was that big of a deal.
And she was a hard-as-nails executive in her own right. She helped run Scientology.
For decades, Shelley and David Miscavige have called the church's international headquarters near Hemet, California, their home. The church's highest-ranking and most dedicated Scientologists live here. They belong to the SEA organization, a devout order of volunteers within the church.
They're the most hardcore inner group of Scientologists. All the power in Scientology is invested in the SEA Org. The captain of the SEA Org is David Miscavige. He runs everything. And Shelley was right there at his side.
According to insiders, the Sea Org members are bound by strict rules. They're closely monitored, and privacy is essentially non-existent.
Listen, my friend, you send a letter out, security force reads it. You can't make a phone call, okay? Without somebody listening in on the other end. You can't drive off the base to go to a store. I think it's all part of the control.
Former church members say David Miscavige rules the organization with an iron fist. And Shelley Miscavige, they maintain, is often the peacemaker.
Shelley Miscavige was known as kind of the helper or the fixer. David Miscavige would do something extreme or draconian, and Shelley would come in and kind of fix things, and she was known as a softer touch.
But now, at her father's funeral, Shelley reportedly shocks her friend by revealing that her power is gone.
Shelley was a different Shelley. She was rattled and agitated. Allegedly, she said, "I'm sorry, I screwed up. I'm not going to be able to help you with this."
After the funeral, she's not been seen since.
The woman who was once at David Miscavige's elbow at every event, at every moment, was simply gone.
Ron Miscavige, a former church member and David Miscavige's father, says his son has not said a word in public or private about his daughter-in-law since her disappearance. Ron left Scientology in 2012. As a result, David disconnected his father. Church members, including Ron's daughters and grandchildren, are forbidden to have any contact with him. And no one else inside the organization even dares to ask about Shelley.
If I were to say to one of my coworkers, "Gee, I wonder where Shelley is," they would write what's called a knowledge report.
In my opinion, Scientology is a snitching culture. It's an interrogation culture.
They would say, "Well, why are you asking where Shelley is? That's David's wife. You have no business asking that."
And they could get you in a lot of trouble. You're then required to turn in your own family members, friends who might have said something about Shelley. You'll be put through a brutal interrogation about what you've heard, who you've talked to.
Dave's created such a toxic environment that their own parishioners know not to even ask.
This is the world that Shelley Miscavige grew up in. She has known little else. Her ascent into the inner circle started when she was just 12 years old. Shelley's parents, Flo and Maurice Barnett, are loyal church members. Soon after Shelley graduates sixth grade, they make a decision that few parents could ever imagine.
Shelley's parents so believed in Scientology, they just basically left her to the church and to L. Ron Hubbard.
L. Ron Hubbard is the church's founder. In the 1950s, he wrote the best-selling self-help manifesto called Dianetics, the Modern Science of Mental Health.
And he parlayed the book Dianetics into a religion.
Shelley's parents want their daughter to fully immerse herself into church life. They leave her to live with their Messiah.
Shelley's parents didn't just drop her off at some church around the corner. They dropped her off at a ship called the Apollo.
The Apollo is a ship that was purchased by Hubbard back in 1967. I know some people say, "Oh, Hubbard had a luxury vessel, is sailing the world in his luxury yacht." No, it was junk.
Janice Grady, 4 years older than Shelley, is one of a dozen teenagers also living on the Apollo, many without their parents. As an Apollo veteran, Janice keeps an eye out for the younger girl.
She was younger than most of the other messengers, so she got left out of a lot of things. She's got no parents, she's got no nothing. L. Ron Hubbard, he titled himself as the Commodore. And so, of course, she's gonna do exactly what she's told.
Shelley's first job? To pass on L. Ron Hubbard's verbal orders to other crew members as a Commodore's messenger.
He had a charismatic way about him.
Shelley, who is said to have worshipped Hubbard, would hang on his every word.
Shelley was known as the messenger's messenger, and she came to view him as a surrogate father.
He was a fatherly figure for all of us.
Shelley is honored to be named a Sea Org member. Like Janice and the others before her, she signs on to be a dutiful disciple in perpetuity.
There's a contract called a billion-year contract.
Scientologists believe that we are immortal beings that have lived countless times in the past and will live countless times in the future.
It's like if I didn't sign, I was being told I was going to be sent off the ship. So, yeah, I signed the Sea Org contract.
Each day, Hubbard's devotees are required to study Scientology and work on the Apollo, scraping off rust and scrubbing the decks.
The stress we were under was just amazing when you look at how young we were. I worked with L. Ron Hubbard 6 hours a day, 7 days a week. My view of Hubbard, he had a temper. He could be very, very explosive. The Sea Org members are treated like slaves. Now, as a parent, I look back and I don't know what my parents were thinking to allow us to stay there. Being a child without parents there, you walk the line. But the whole purpose of why we were there was to help make the planet a better place. The whole group had that same purpose and push.
Who would imagine then that Shelley Barnett, the shy girl left by her devout parents to serve 4 years on an old ship, would go on to lead a lavish life as Scientology's queen. Or, in the blink of an eye, she would vanish. Shelley Miscavige, a high-ranking official in the Church of Scientology, is last seen in August 2007 at her father's funeral.
No one inside the church talked about her. Where is she? She's gone? Like, you just disappeared her?
Many believe the man she married, church leader David Miscavige, knows more than he is saying. Seventeen-year-old Shelley Barnett meets David Miscavige, a Sea Organization member, at an isolated church site in Eastern California in 1978.
Young Shelley and young David end up at this base that has a huge campus-like atmosphere. David is this charismatic kid and this golden child, but Shelley is too. She was definitely a catch.
She was just a young, good-looking, bubbly blonde girl. Very sociable.
You could tell they were in love. They just were very affectionate to each other.
They marry in 1982, and both swear to share a life in the church's innermost circle and devote their lives to serving Scientology.
David Miscavige was a guy that had his eye on the prize from a very, very young age.
David and Shelley's dramatic rise begins with L. Ron Hubbard's decline. By the 1980s, Hubbard is a complete recluse, but he still guides the church using a messenger to communicate with members. And David Miscavige, insiders say, was happy to play the part.
David got himself in a position where he was like a relay point of all communications going and coming from L. Ron Hubbard. That was his first step to gaining power.
He could report whatever he wanted. He used that to report on different people to get them out of the way.
Anybody who had any sort of power, he made sure to get them reassigned so that he was the one left standing.
In 1986, as a new year begins, the unthinkable happens. L. Ron Hubbard dies of a stroke. He is 74.
Everybody thought he was going to be immortal, and all of a sudden, he dies.
Like most megalomaniac dictators, L. Ron Hubbard never thought about a succession.
Hubbard leaves no clear instructions regarding his successor. For Shelley and David Miscavige, it's a life-changing moment.
David Miscavige sees this as his opportunity. And very quickly, he starts to lay claim to the crown.
On January 27th, 1986, church leaders gather their disciples to announce Hubbard's death.
And who should take the stage here but this 26-year-old, good-looking kid named David Miscavige?
Most of the people in the room had never heard of this guy.
This is the moment where David grabs the brass ring and the moment when David and Shelley ascend to royalty.
Within months, David Miscavige is the undisputed church leader. Shelley is by his side.
She had, next to him, more clout than anybody. She had an office, she had staff, but her main job was to support David as his assistant.
Under Miscavige's leadership, membership skyrockets.
The late 80s, early 90s, Scientology really had its maximum, not just numbers of people, but influence. David Miscavige took them to new heights.
Here's the thing about the Church of Scientology. They were based in Los Angeles, and from the beginning, they had always set out to use celebrity as the ultimate recruiting tool. It was like, wow, that's kind of the cool church. That's the celebrity church.
They had celebrities like John Travolta and Kirstie Alley.
Miscavige set about trying to market the church as the celebrity religion. His greatest success was Tom Cruise, the biggest movie star on Earth at the time, and a very dedicated Scientologist.
Seven years into his reign, David Miscavige lands what some say is his single greatest triumph. The United States officially recognizes the Church of Scientology as a religion with all of the tax benefits.
When he got them tax exempt status, this was no question David Miscavige's greatest coup.
At this point, Shelley and David were in their heyday. The church feels like it's an unstoppable force, and it's building up this almost institutional arrogance that ultimately has very dangerous consequences for one young woman.
The Church of Scientology has a spiritual headquarters in Clearwater, Florida. Legions of devoted members come to live here in 1994. That includes 35-year-old Lisa McPherson.
Lisa McPherson was a very vivacious young woman who grew up in Dallas and became a Scientologist in the 1980s. Almost right out of high school.
She was extremely athletic, healthy, and she was single, and her personality attracted people to her.
The typical perfect Scientologist is someone who is a total go-getter, but is deeply insecure, always in need of more. And this was Lisa.
Lisa McPherson is captivated by the community. She's also excited by Scientology's intensive auditing sessions.
Central to Scientology is this idea that you're going to talk to somebody else about your memories. And the person you talk to is called an auditor.
It is a kind of counseling slash therapy slash confessional.
Each daily auditing session begins with Lisa holding two metal tubes wired to Scientology's signature tool, the E-meter.
They watch the needle to see how you answer certain questions. And from that, they believe they can tell whether you're lying, telling the truth, or withholding something.
And if you believe it, you'll spill your guts because you figure you can't hide anything.
Auditing is a long, ongoing process aimed at improving both mind and spirit.
And there's always the next thing that's wrong with you. You've solved this problem, well, what about this problem? So you need to buy more auditing.
In fact, auditing fees are what help keep the church coffers filled. And no center in the world fills them faster than Clearwater.
Over the time I was there, it probably averaged between $1.5 and $2.7 million a week. By itself, a week. A lot of money. A lot of money. It was very important to Miscavige from that perspective, period. So he literally moved into town.
David Miscavige was kind of trying to micromanage the auditors.
In the summer of 1995, former high-level members say, as Miscavige supervised the auditing, Lisa McPherson attracted his personal attention.
Lisa is working for somebody who is a super high-profile, big donor in the church, with very close ties to David Miscavige. And that made her high profile in her own way.
David Miscavige didn't just slow down and notice Lisa McPherson, he honed in. And he's now personally handling and saying, this is your next action with Lisa. Being the case supervisor, that is an astonishing thing. I watched him. I saw him. Believe me, this guy personally took care of Lisa McPherson.
As her auditing sessions intensify, Lisa McPherson struggles with the vigorous process.
Lisa began to suffer this psychological instability. And there was a tremendous effort made to kind of get her back on track.
Finally, on September 7th, 1995, Lisa's auditing sessions hit a spectacular high note. Her e-meter indicates she is clear, freed of emotional baggage, a coveted achievement.
David Miscavige himself declared Lisa clear.
She should be a superhuman being, highly functioning, and she is the opposite.
One day, not long after she was declared clear, Lisa is driving her car in downtown Clearwater, and she gets in a fender bender.
She rear-ends a man pulling a small boat. It's a very, very minor impact.
One of the first responders notes that McPherson has no physical injuries, but he finds her responses strange. He asks McPherson to pull over.
And so she drives to the side of the road. And there comes Lisa McPherson out of her car, completely nude.
She strips off all her clothes and starts walking down the street.
So the EMS person runs up to Lisa, wraps her in a blanket, and she took her just less than a minute down the road into the emergency room.
Under Florida law, Lisa McPherson is required to undergo a psychiatric evaluation. The ER doctor notes in her file that she seems oddly robotic and disoriented.
Somehow, we don't know how, some Scientologists show up in the ER because they hear that Lisa McPherson's there.
Now, understand, this is a woman who has just declared a clear, just stripped naked and walked down the middle of a street in Clearwater, Florida. And they're desperate to not subject her to any kind of actual psychiatric treatment.
L. Ron Hubbard was convinced that psychiatric medication, and psychiatry in general, is a worldwide conspiracy, an evil practice. Scientologists embrace this belief. The church members convince McPherson to leave with them immediately.
The doctor very reluctantly agrees and allows Lisa to sign herself out of the hospital and go with the Scientologists. L. Ron Hubbard drew up his own treatment for people that were suffering what he called a psychotic break. It is basically a protocol of vitamins and minerals and juices and silence. Anybody coming in and out cannot speak to them.
The introspection rundown is what it's called, but I've never seen it work, and I think it makes you crazier.
That evening, according to investigators and testimony, the group brings Lisa back to the Clearwater Center to begin treatment.
They take her, they say, and they put her in there with a guard outside her door to make sure she didn't run away, and with so-called caretakers inside.
And she's a raving, manic person. And she's talking to herself. She's throwing things around. She's, at some points, banging on the door, trying to get out.
She refused to take a shower. She refused to get dressed.
She's thrown her food all over the place. She's thrown the juices they try to give her. So she's dehydrated.
She was becoming combative with the so-called caretakers. They're not allowed to talk to her at all, so she's talking, and there's no response. I believe that, for Lisa McPherson, it was a nightmare.
Among her only direct caretakers are a file clerk, a librarian, and a teenager.
The thing about this is that if you really are a devoted Scientologist, you believe these methods are how you do it. They didn't understand why she was not getting well. She just falls into this kind of catatonic silence, this kind of stone stillness, and not anyone calls 911.
That's the last thing they would ever do, is call 911. Then it becomes public.
What happens next will leave a mother searching for answers, police baffled, and David Miscavige scrambling as never before to save his empire. Behind a guarded door in a Church of Scientology building, 36-year-old Lisa McPherson is struggling to stay alive. Church insiders say she's been kept in isolation, in the throes of a psychotic breakdown. A team of assigned members takes turns treating and monitoring Lisa.
Every single day was logged, in fact, hour by hour. She's 2 weeks in, and she's just immobile and basically comatose.
Lisa McPherson's family has no idea of her devastating physical and mental condition.
They never told the mother, oh, your daughter's in isolation, oh, your daughter's psychotic, oh, your daughter's not doing well. Never, no.
The thing that's bothersome is the way the church handled it. It seems like the real priority is not the parishioner or the parishioner's family.
She was in this isolation, as they call it, for 17 days. She lost over 40 pounds.
She's clearly close to death.
So what do? They put Lisa McPherson in the rear seat of the van, and they don't drive her to Morton Plant Hospital less than a minute down the road.
The van passes four hospitals on the way, all to ensure that Lisa McPherson will be in the care of an emergency room doctor who is a Scientologist. The closest one is on duty in Newport Richey, 45 minutes away. As the ER nurses bring Lisa in, they are stunned to discover she is severely emaciated.
The nurses testify that they had never seen anyone come to the emergency room like that, except photographs from a concentration camp. She wasn't moving, her eyes were fixed, and she was gray. She was already dead.
Lisa McPherson is pronounced dead on December 5th, 1995. The medical examiner rules on the cause of death.
Dr. Joan Wood, she opined that Lisa McPherson died from a pulmonary embolism caused by severe dehydration. The stakes are huge for Scientology. They were in charge of her medical care and her psychological care, and they failed at both.
Marty Rathbun, one of Miscavige's top lieutenants, would later testify in a civil case that David Miscavige ordered him to fix it.
People who work for the church thoroughly strip that room of every sign of her. They mop it down, they get rid of her clothes. In the morning, the police show up and they see a room with a nice bouquet of flowers. It's as if she was never there.
Marty Rathbun would also admit to taking McPherson's auditing files and the detailed hourly logs kept by her assigned caretakers as she deteriorated. Rathbun says he had the incriminating pages destroyed.
He threw away the last 3 days and the first 2 days of the logs. It's the destruction of material evidence, cover up.
The people that were involved with her case were shipped to Australia. Shipped off, said they can't be interviewed. All just poof, 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 gone.
Nearly 17 hours after Lisa McPherson died, a church official calls her family.
Their mother was devastated by this news. She broke down. She said, "Why did my daughter die?" The entire family broke down because Lisa was so loved by all the members of the family.
The church's explanation was that this was an accidental death. They don't really know what happened. She just got terribly ill. We did our best for her. I believe a woman had been permitted to die. A woman had been allowed to starve to death. There was a huge media frenzy. It's very sensational.
Authorities consider the circumstances of Lisa McPherson's death suspicious. A state attorney charges the Church of Scientology with two felonies: criminal neglect for allowing Lisa to die without medical aid, and practicing medicine without a license.
Miscavige, he was just flipping out. The case, it became more important than anything. It wasn't any sorrow, it was just into complete protection of the church.
David Miscavige threw millions and millions of dollars trying to make this case go away.
In the end, the state attorney's criminal case is closed in 2000. There is not enough solid evidence to take the case to trial. But Lisa McPherson's family hires attorney Ken Dandar to file a civil suit against the church for wrongful death.
What is most disturbing about the Lisa McPherson case is this death was completely preventable had they acted like normal human beings.
In 2004, Dandar succeeds in winning a settlement for the family, a sizable but undisclosed amount.
It's important to understand that Lisa McPherson's ordeal was not just about a mentally ill woman who was mistreated, neglected, and then died. It was about what lengths that church, that group will go to control a crisis and then to cover it up.
The alleged cover-up of Lisa McPherson's tragic death, like the official silence that followed Shelley Miscavige's disappearance 10 years later, raises questions, some say, about what else the church might be hiding.
The power that David acquired, that changed him. I would say that that is the thing that corrupted him and made him the way he is now, which he is ruthless.
According to former church insiders, David Miscavige rules the Church of Scientology with relentless authority.
David Miscavige, who could be really charming a lot of the time, had an explosive temper. The anecdotes that you hear coming out of people that used to be in the church can really be staggering.
This is a boss who went from yelling to verbally abusing people to then physically abusing them, pretty routinely and staggeringly. There's no shades of gray. I saw him do it.
And not even Shelley Miscavige can escape her husband's wrath.
Sources say she had a ticking clock over her head, and it was only a matter of time before something punitive happened. And it came soon enough.
David Miscavige moves from the church's home base near Hemet, California, to Los Angeles, notably without his wife.
Shelley took advantage of it to get some things done at the base. Two things in particular. One was something called the org board. It's this complicated organizational chart of who does what. It's just a list of jobs.
While David was away in LA, Shelley went and reshuffled the whole deck and made another org board and distributed it to all the church officials without David signing off on it.
The other thing that she did was there were plans for lavish new quarters. And in order to make it happen, Shelley had his stuff put in crates. You know, she's taking care of business, right?
But she takes those actions without David Miscavige's permission. Then he finds out.
And I have people who were there at that time, and they said it was like a volcano erupting. He just went ballistic. He went crazy, screaming at people.
Former church members point to this moment as the point of no return in their relationship.
Shelley Miscavige is last seen in public in early August 2007 at her father's funeral. Could David Miscavige, her husband, be behind her unexplained disappearance?
If you crossed David or you did wrong, you were never forgiven. That was it. You're done for all time.
Some insiders maintain that Miscavige condemned choices Shelley made regarding the church and their personal life. And they believe he has exiled her.
Gone is her fancy office and her staff and her celebrity designer that made all their clothes. After this, virtually no one in the church saw Shelley Miscavige again. She became a ghost.
Six years after Shelley Miscavige is last seen in public, former Scientologist Leah Remini reports her missing.
The LAPD investigates it and comes back fairly quickly and says, we've spoken to Shelley Miscavige. She's not being held against her will.
Lieutenant Andre Dawson of the LAPD personally told me she did not want to make a public statement. That's all the LAPD can do.
The Church of Scientology disputes some of the details presented in this program. It considers any implication that Shelley Miscavige disappeared or is a captive, unfounded, and offensive.
But no one in the church would say where she was, and the mystery began to snowball. Why can't we just see her? What is going on here?
In time, clues begin to emerge. A former member is passing through the mailroom at the Hemet, California headquarters when he sees mail addressed to Shelley Miscavige and where they are sending it.
And the mail coming in for Shelley was being forwarded to this mountain compound complex near Lake Arrowhead, California. It's the most secretive entity inside of Scientology, and it's called the Church of Spiritual Technology, or CST. It's a secret within secrets. This is where they're archiving Hubbard's words.
They're the people who are taking L. Ron Hubbard's works and etching them into platinum plates and then storing them underground to guarantee the existence of Scientology for hundreds of thousands of years.
This is just a very small compound with maybe 15 people on it. And it's where we believe she's been staying all this time.
It's an outpost in the middle of nowhere.
The site is 80 miles east of Los Angeles. Within its fences, the security is state of the art.
Is she a prisoner there? Is she actually happy to be there? Would she escape if she could? These are the questions that we are constantly debating, my sources and myself.
Ron Miscavige thinks Shelley believes she deserves her fate for somehow failing David and the church.
The biggest thing that keeps you there is the mental prison that you build. I think she believes that she should be there for the greater good of all mankind.
The mystery is, why doesn't Shelley just come out and say, hey, public, you know, I'm here, everything's fine.
After more than 10 years, the church's response to questions about Shelley has been to request that others respect her right to privacy.
What happened to her is not unusual. This happens all the time. When people do things that are considered bad, that is the way of Scientology.
The tantalizing thing about Shelley Miscavige is that she is the one that knows every secret, everything that went on with the church, everything that went on with David Miscavige. And if she were to just say, okay, this is how it really happened, this would be a seismic event for the Church of Scientology.
I'll tell you, if she sent me a message, I'd be there for her in a heartbeat. The distance we went through when we were younger, I'm there for her, I'm there for anybody in that position or anyone that wants to leave. My door is open to them.